ready. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Andrew Whitaker and Chris Morgan.
What's up, homies?
Hey, how's it going?
And Adam Abramowitz.
I'm the converted playcaster.
We're going to talk about that today, I'm sure. This is what our first real podcast after the official launch of Warhammer 40K 8th Edition. And this episode, we're going to talk about some immediate things we've seen in the meta. And like, and I mean that in the tournament sense, but in the actual, like what we're seeing in the tournament scene. And stuff from the Forge World books. I mean, I got the Imperial Armor Indexes today, all four of them, and there's some stuff in there. You know, I immediately flipped. Now, we're prepping for the ATC. ATC is coming up July, the weekend of July 15th. There may only be a couple of spots left for teams. They're going to have 50 teams for the Warhammer 40K side, each five-man teams playing individually. You're not paired up with anyone on the tables. This is one of the just rock star events. One of the best events in the country. I mean, you can tell the big draw every year. If you are curious about it, go to whatc.org. All the information is there. I hope there are some spots left. And this close to the event, there's going to be like some churn of teams. So, you know, if your team can come from anywhere, I definitely suggest you check it out. It is a little bit outside of Chattanooga, a little bit north of my hometown. So I wouldn't miss it, but I definitely wouldn't miss it because it's an awesome event.
And like Paul said, like they I think just yesterday they posted there are three open spots available. So if you want to get in on this and you got five buddies or four buddies, a five-man team, definitely sign up. It's one of the greatest 40K experiences you can ever partake in.
So a lot of this discussion we've got around what we expect to see in the tournament scene is what we are going to expect to see at that event. So I even want to kind of shape it to say that in that event, the way you pair up against each other, it's not necessarily a take all comers or a random pairing. The captains have a hand in deciding which list plays what, and that also shapes things. So just keep that in mind as we're talking about list and what we've heard about so far, because there's a lot of conversation around how to succeed at that event. Now, we do have some data.
It was a lot easier last year because we knew what we had to counter, right, Paul?
Right. Things were a lot more established then, but now it's the Wild West. Now, there have been some kind of breakout hits or things that at least mathematically have proven to be pretty strong. I also want to talk about the greater, like what are they called? Like the mega super ultra demons,
the Forge World greater demons, the named ones,
the named greater demons are pretty impressive. And when the first thing I did when I got these indexes was flip to the models that I have and flip to the models that I want to have.
You don't know what those models are yet, though, on the second half until you go through the book.
Well, right. I mean, things that have always looked cool, because one of the initiatives that the company took up was to make index entries for every single model that is currently released. And I'll be honest, there's a couple of them that I don't even know what they are. Like, and they've just never been relevant before in some of these indexes that I'm flipping through. So I had to go educate myself. Like, what
Necromitis or whatever his name is from Death Guard?
No. Necrosis is
Necrosis.
Yeah, I've used him a lot of time before. He used to beef up plague zombies.
I've never seen him before.
I'm surprised
to hear that.
He's an amazing model. He's the Nurgle Sorcerer from Forge World. It's his commonly accepted model. So he's got a spear. He's got like Nurglings crawling over him. One of his hand and leg is mutated. It's an amazing model.
And I've never seen it ever. That's
what you're describing, though, is a phenomenon that also, I can't remember what it was. There was one or two, there was a couple of tanks, and they might have been even marine tanks that I've just never bothered to learn the name of. But now you got to look at
it. Yeah, it's interesting. I remember when I first started playing Imperial Guard, I don't know, 3-4 years ago or something like that. And I got the Imperial Guard Forge World books and was just like pouring over them, and you'd find something some weird, obscure Forge World tank that cost $1 million on the Forge World website. And you're like, wow, this is actually super duper good. And you'd read the rules about it, and So some variant of a Malkador, whatever it is, and, you, and then you, you find it in the book and you read it and you, you think, wow, I could really design a list about this, and then so on and so forth. It's that same feeling, but everything's brand new. And I was talking to a buddy of mine recently about 8th edition, how he was just over the moon about the whole thing. And but he was just so over the moon, and he said, you know, we've had this giant reset where everything, the crawl or the escalation or the creep has begun anew. We're back at square one. And everything is new. Every rule, every unit, every model has a new set of, should be looked at with a fresh set of eyes. And that is a pretty exciting thing. And I think that, Paul, you hit the nail on the head when it's the reality is that there's some of the big bad Forge World demons are like, they just seem very ground shaking.
Well, let's
I saw the Zinch one this weekend.
Yeah,
the Escus or whatever. I don't even let's.
Yeah, he's got a long name that's hyphenated and apostrophed or whatever. But I don't want it to be understated that the enthusiasm for this edition is high. At the released the launch party they had at Games Workshop HQ, the line was out the door for people picking up their sets, and they did a 24-hour coverage of it, live streams on their Facebook page. I actually got to have the benefit of being on them and doing some commentary and playing a game on those, and they're still up for viewing on their Facebook page. So if you haven't checked that out, everything they were doing for that. Go look at it on their Facebook page, on the Warhammer TV Facebook page. But what isn't captured on that was how many people were there in the offices, in the stores.
Did they plan on having that many people?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it just...
They knew it.
They knew that there was going to be that many. Okay.
Lining around the event hall, they had their artists there. And I mean the artists, like the people that drew all the art in the Horus Heresy books were there. The guy that was doing the digital art and editing for all the... like all those really cool things and those fancy books, I'll just say it that way. That crew was there. The painting staff that do all the painting for the White Dwarf and the box arts were there. I mean, yes, they knew people were going to be there, and they planned for it, and they made it a thing for folks. I mean, there was a lot of interaction between the people that make the game and the people there to celebrate the launch of the game. I mean, they were celebrating it too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, in the pub, you know, Bugman's Bar right next to the place, that place was filled up. The tournament place was filled up. The stores were filled up with people, you know, enthusiasm incredibly high. And we're seeing that. And that's how we have this data about, you know, what you might see on the tabletop is the enthusiasm is incredibly high. And that's how we have this data, because people are in there brewing the same way that we are, trying to make lists, trying to make models that they have on the shelf work, trying to build their dream list specifically for this edition.
Yeah, so, I mean, the list building has not stopped at all on this end. How about you, Adam?
Who here on this show of hands, is not completely stoked about this edition?
hands that everyone can see.
Yeah, it's hashtag, amazing for radio.
Hashtag bad radio.
Yeah.
But, I knew going in this it was bad radio, but I knew it was a guaranteed effort that we're all really excited.
Well, I think that one of the manifestations of kind of excitement, more than just list building and talking about everything else like that, is just the motivation to go out there and play games. You know, I think that it's been basically a month of 8th edition so far, and I've played a dozen 40K games, which is way more than I had played in the month previous or the 2 months previous, you know, my wedding and everything else notwithstanding. It's just there's a motivation to actually get on the tabletop. It's not just list hammer. It's just not just theory hammer.
You're not going through the motions of you know how to beat the 2+ rerollable. You know how to beat that. You know how to beat this. Now it's a different ball game.
Yeah, it's really cool to. I think the fun part of list designing right now is that there aren't the five nemesis ultra builds, or the 2+ rerollable, the demon spam list, the Eldar warp spider, you know, the jet bike spam, whatever it was, like all the kind of terrible things that existed in the competitive tournament meta of late seventh edition they're all put to rest. And so you can really, and we'd have no idea what the big monsters of this edition are.
Yeah, you know,
I have a hunch they are lurking. I think we'll talk about them on the show, whether it's conscripts or Echios,
Zinch
demon, whatever it is. but it's fun. And you know, we're seeing some very interesting so far in the early tournaments. I mean, we've had, I know that there's been two tournaments in the Atlanta area so far. There's been plenty of like the tournament results are kind of rolling, trickling in. And what we're seeing is fascinating. I mean, I heard about a five rounder recently that a Blood Angels Storm Raven and Storm Talon Spam won.
Yeah. Spam's a harsh word. Redundancy, built-in efficiency.
I think that's okay. All right, for our listeners at home, if you want to hear the positive spin of Paul Murphy, that's fine.
But it's also spam.
that's my buddy Tim. I actually drove up with him to Idaho for the Boise Cup GD. I was there this weekend. A big thank you to all the guys for the nice warm welcome. Our Utah crew came. We saw, we conquered, and we took all their stuff. And that includes Tim and his flyer list. It was. He was my round one opponent, and he definitely proved the power of the Hurricane Bolter.
Take a step back for a second. Who would have thought at the end of 7th edition that anybody that brought more than one flyer, or any flyers period, let alone multiple, would win a GT, a two-day tournament, and he just did. Forget about anything that we know now. Forget about 8th edition rules. Let's just like
that's true.
Take a step back to where we were.
It's a complete
break. Exactly. We are in the Wild West right now, and I think it's incredible.
You know, I think it's interesting that you've talked about it. It is the Wild West, and there is a ton of upside for almost, I mean, you put 2,000 points, and you're like, wow, this could do some damage. You know, we talked about it on this show, and I think this is as fine a segue as imaginable to kind of get into, like, what do we anticipate, or what have we heard, or what have we seen as being those kind of
Razorbacks.
Yeah, tier ones kind of stuff. And
Andrew, you might get to play two Malkadors at Warzone this year.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you know, we're still talking about it, but I mean, you know, it's a possibility.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Warzone is going to be a very, very, very fun tournament this year, no doubt. With Forge World not being included in ATC options, part of me is really like, oh, I'm kind of bummed out about that. And then part of me is just like, thank goodness. I think Shane made exactly the right decision. He and the judging team at ATC.
I would agree. Yeah.
I think 100% made the right call when they said no Forge World. This is the first. I think that there's kind of a big five or six tournament in North America, and ATC is certainly one of them. You know, you put Adepticon and LVO and I think Warzone in that conversation.
Just the weight. I mean, it's a world class event, but there's also 250 people there. And so that puts it in its a really nice category.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think that they've kind of always been an even-handed administrative kind of judge crew. And I think that the lack of Forge World is a good choice for this particular round. But I don't think it necessarily inherently limits the power of any particular list design. I mean,
and that's one of the things that I feel, especially with the Forge World rules where they are right now and where the indexes are. We're very pro Forge World on the show. Am I pretty safe to say that, guys? Would you say
affirmative?
That?
Affirmative.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Yeah.
So I think that giving everybody some time to digest and giving the community a little bit of time to review these in a little more detail isn't going to really hurt anybody. And from my experience playing the game, I haven't found somebody who says, you know what, my army would be usable if I could just bring Forge World.
We do want to talk about what we're going to see, what we can expect to see, and the lurkers in the shadows. But I just want to draw attention to these big old demons, because they work differently now than I remember them working before. And we're going to be talking about specifically the four big giant named greater demons out of the Imperial Armor Forces of Chaos Index. You guys with me?
Let's do it, man.
Yep.
Let's break him down.
Angrath the Unbound is a demon lord. He hits on twos with his weapon. He hits on fours with any shooting attacks. His toughness 8 with 24 wounds. I want to talk briefly about this toughness and wound category business, because it's both easier to wound tougher things and a little bit harder to wound weaker things. Because you're now where you were wounding a lot of stuff on twos before, like say you were shooting a strength 6 weapon and a toughness 3 guy or whatever, a toughness 4 guy. Now you're needing threes. And that's anytime you're messing with the math of a D6, you know, one pip goes a long way. So just wanted to point that out there, that the T8, maybe not what it was, but if it was T6 or T5, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It could be, I mean, I, And I think that Strength 5, as a result of that, has gotten extremely good. For the sake of being able to wound anything up to toughness 9 on 5s.
Yep.
That became such a crucial part of my own strategy when I was playing this weekend, is getting the strength 5 on dude so that, you know, I'm wounding knights on a 5 or a mastodon on a 5.
And you're wounding marines on 3s, the same thing that assault cannon would do.
Exactly.
And people are so down on Tau, but like their base weapon for an infantry troop is still strength 5. Like, guys, don't take riptides.
We don't talk about the Tau. We had a whole Xenos episode where we specifically didn't talk about the Tau.
Fish companies. You know,
I'm kidding. Bring that up. I've spent maybe 13 months without mentioning Tau. So
no, I'm kidding. We actually legitimately forgot to mention the Tau in our Xenos coverage, and I sincerely apologize. We will rectify that as soon as possible.
Paul is making fun of himself right here. Yeah. You see this? This is him verbally prostrating himself to the mercy of our poor betrayed fan base.
That's all we heard. Fish commies. Not great orc coverage. It was, where are the Tau? So, okay. Wounds, 24 wounds. I mean, that's up there with 2+ armor save is what he's got. He does have the 4+ invulnerable save, but he doesn't degrade. He keeps movement 16, and that's really, movement 16 is pretty big.
Huge.
That's not awful. that's not bad at all.
Remember in this game, there's no exclusions on when you can charge people anymore. You can charge people all the time. You can shoot somebody behind them, charge the guy in front. You know, the world is your oyster with what you want to charge and how you want to charge. So being able to cross that midway point with movement on something as beastly as this dude and then attempt to charge, I mean, what's killing
him? How many attacks does he have, Paul?
It's 8,000. He has 10 attacks, and that's just base attacks.
That's 10 base.
On twos.
And he's strength what?
He has strength 12.
It's so dirty.
Well,
I'm
partly kidding here, because his Axe of Khorne is +3 strength, so he's technically strength 15.
Dude, it doesn't matter at that point. Like, what is, man? So strength 15 in the game, wounding on twos, T8 characters.
No, not T7. T7, because T7. Remember, lower the way the wounds now, you have to be more than double to get that 2.
So he's wounding knights on 3s, but every other vehicle, basically, sans Land Raider toughness, he's wounding on 2s. And he can fly, right?
You asking me, does he have flight? Or does he have
the
fly
keyword?
Yeah,
does he have the fly keyword? Yeah. He's got big old wings.
Yeah, he does have the fly keyword. He has
to. So he's basically swatting Storm Ravens out of the sky.
Hang on a second.
So, good.
He does have fly. I wanted to confirm that, because I think in one edition he might not have. He might have been running around like Scarbrand.
So, good friend of the show. He's been on the show multiple times. Horton played Angrath or whatever, angry demon, whatever we want to call him. This past weekend, and his resounding response was, he is amazing. Now, Horton, everything is amazing. He's the most positive person that you could ever encounter. But him saying that Angrath is as amazing as he let on is saying something, if you know him. So he's hitting on twos, wounding most everything on threes.
And apologies, you don't have to more than double. You just have to double the toughness to get the 2+. But if your strength is twice or more than the toughness, then you're rolling a 2+. If its strength is greater than the toughness, it's just a 3. So that's where the 3 and the 5 matter a lot.
So what other special rules does Angrath have?
Oh, it basically never stops. If a Khorne demon unit with the ability either charges or is charged or performs a heroic intervention, which is important because he's also a character, add 1 to the strength and attack characteristics of all models in the unit until the end of the turn. So I guess that puts him up to strength 16, and then with 11 attacks.
Forget about him, but think about him assaulting something near berserkers, which are now strength 5. That's huge. You got a 20-man unit or 15-man unit, or even, you know, a 5-man unit of berserkers that are in assault, and he's close by. That is insanely huge. Strength five and assault.
I think Paul he does not have a rule that says, despite his characterness, you can chew at him, right? He follows all the same rules
normal. So the fact that he has more than 10 wounds, he can be picked out.
Right. Okay.
But he can do the heroic intervention. still because he's a character.
Right. He just does the shuffle sidestep shimmy.
Yeah.
And, I see you guys are fighting over here.
Within range of his big old base, then he can scooter in there and begin the murder phase.
Yeah. That's
polite. I don't know if he's. I think Angrath is very good. I think the inherent shortcomings of the rest of the Khorne and Chaos, which this is just one man's opinion. I think that of the Chaos Space Marines and Chaos Demons that we've seen, I think Khorne is one of the weaker ones. I think Death Guard is much stronger. I think Tzeentch is much stronger. But despite that, I think Angrath kind of can really fill some gaps there and make them.
Well, I mean, let's playable. Be real too. This dude is also like 1,000 points. I mean, he's a ton of points. They're only level 35 thing.
I think that like Achaos, which is the Tzeentch one, that's just the way I pronounce his name. I'm sure there are people who I'm going to correct me, but Achaos.
The Librarius just crosses out the name and writes Heresy instead just to make it easier.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, whether it's Heresy, Achaos, or some other pronunciation, forgive me, but you know, it's like 750 points, seven to 800 points. Which is a lot, no doubt. But it's just barely a third, right? You're still looking at 60% of your army to fill as you want. And I don't think that you're going to find a more efficient damage output in all of the Chaos Space Marine codices so far that we've seen that can match. I mean, where are you going to find a more efficient 700 points of death?
He also has a gun. He has a gun that he can fire at units within 1 inch of him. He can, it's not a pistol. It's an assault weapon. But it says this weapon can be used within 1 inch of an enemy unit and can target enemy units within 1 inch of friendly units.
You're talking about Angrath, right?
Yeah. So Angrath can fire in close combat and shoot other things in close combat with his 12-inch gun that is assault 2d6. Strength 7, AP neg 3, and 2 damage apiece. So he's essentially got a souped-up plasma gun that he can fire.
That's insanely powerful, but I have a question. I think some of our listeners will have the same question, because this has come up in my games. If you have a pistol weapon that allows you to shoot while you're locked into close combat, does that mean that you get to shoot that weapon in the shooting phase while you're locked into close combat?
Yes.
Yeah.
And does it mean that you have to shoot at the unit that you're locked into?
You have to shoot at the closest model, closest unit.
All right. So
you get to fire your pistols. That's kind of the takeaway, is that you get to fire the pistols in the shooting phase against things that you are within 1 inch of.
Gotcha.
Okay. Pistol weapons only. Pistol weapons. The reason this guy has a special rule that says he gets to fire within 1 inch, because his weapon is not a pistol weapon; it's an assault weapon.
Yeah, I'm purely speaking to the. And sorry to sidetrack us there, because I totally did.
No, it's a fair point, because it illustrates this dude's the fact that his weapon is special. The real last big thing that he does is he can actually deny the witch. Not only can he make, he's not a psyker, but he can make 2 attempts to deny the witch and gets a +3 on his attempts to do so.
That's huge for Khorne, because if you're taking pure Khorne, you have no ability to deny the witch. That's amazing.
You're going to be pushing this guy up, so he's going to probably be in range of psykers. I think that's a very powerful ability. I'm happy to see it on here. And then he can fly. The fly thing means, you know, of course, he can engage airborne units, which is not something every unit can do. That's one of the reasons the Dark Eldar are so powerful, because they get that ability in a lot of their stuff.
You know, in terms of, a lot of people talk about Blood Angels and jump pack troops, right? Everybody wants troops for Blood Angels to be jump packs. You don't have to have it that way, but you can still have a jump pack army. And what makes jump packs effective now, whereas they were just less good bikes, is now you have that ability to engage targets that are in the air. You have that ability to jump up and over instead of drive go around when it comes to buildings and obstacles and things. I think that that utility can't be overstated.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, Chris, because you know, right now I've long been fond of saying that the competitive 40K scene is an ecosystem, right? This fish eats this creature, which eats this plant, which eats this mosquito, which kills this other creature. Like it's all this kind of symbiotic. What's the next thing in the food chain? And right now, I believe that power armor is very low on the food chain. It's expensive. And the way that the AP modifiers work right now, and I could be totally wrong, and maybe it'll bear itself out differently, but I'm fairly confident that some of the worst armies in the game right now are those that are playing with power armor.
Yep, if you're standing three up power armor with nothing else.
Exactly.
Yep.
If you're counting on a 14 or 15 point model with a 3+ save, you're going to lose a lot of games, I think. But it will be interesting to see, Chris, is if you – I think that you've really honed in on something. The capacity for jump troops to engage planes. If planes get to a point in the competitive scene where they are a true and endearing – and an enduring problem – then you will see a rise of assault armies with jump packs that say, hey, I see your planes. I'm going to beat you with these models that can jump up and assault you and kill you. And so I look forward to seeing in the next 4-6 months whether jump pack troops have an insurgence to combat flyers.
So I'm playing a list right now that has 3 flyers, 21 jump pack troops, and 2 dreadnoughts.
Very well suited to handle some airborne shenanigans.
Yeah,
quite so.
But that's a good segue into something that has airborne shenanigans, and that is a Terus Raucaris.
Yeah, that would be the Zinch guy.
Also bless known you. As the Slayer of Souls.
A Terus. A Terus.
You're close, Andrew.
A Taus Raucaris.
Okay, so can we call him A Taus?
Yes, that like, we can.
All right, we're all going to agree we're calling him A Taus.
This guy is another power level 35. So again, you know, folks, we're talking about the crazy stats on these things, but these are incredibly well-pointed things. I mean, the points match, you know, what they are, which are giant demons that you could potentially have to sacrifice one of your characters to bring into the game. I don't want that to be forgotten. Now, this guy has 27 wounds, though, so more than Angrath.
Yeah, he is better in every way, in my opinion, than Angrath. I don't mean to disparage Angrath, or he's great, but this
when we're talking about two things that are epic creatures, right? You can have an opinion and a preference. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of in terms of utility, he has a massive 70-inch range weapon.
60. The Staff of Cataclysm. Yeah. He's got something called the Staff of Cataclysm, which is a 60-inch range that's Assault 2d6, Strength 9, negative 4, AP 3 damage. The weapon, and it can also be fired within 1 inch of a same the rules the other guy had, but it also goes on, said if a unit of at least 10 infantry models has its last model slain by this attack, a unit of 3 flamers as each is added to your army and immediately placed within 1 inch of the slain unit before it's removed.
What really makes him special, and he's no slouch in close combat either. I mean, I think he only has like 6 attacks.
It's 6 attacks, yeah.
Yeah, so not the 10, but equally devastating. You know, it's all mortal wounds and whatever all else. Like, he'll...
It's not all mortal wounds. He's got Warpfire Talons, which are strength user, so strength 8 in this case, negative 3 AP, they do D6 damage. Any hits that roll a 6 for its wound rolls immediately inflict D3 mortal wounds on the target in addition to any other damage.
I apologize. You're right. It's D6 damage with the potential of extra mortal wounds, which is outlandish.
When you roll that 6, you get still 3 mortal wounds and 6 damage.
Yep. He's still hitting on 2s. Is he ballistic skill 2?
Yeah, he hits on 2+ in both phases.
Yeah, so it's 2+. He's comparable in every way in terms of damage output in close combat to Angrath. He has 4 fewer attacks. But a D6 damage, I mean, and he... very, very good. What I think makes him separate, what separates him and makes him truly elite and truly a problem, and in GTs that allow Forge World models, I think we'll probably see, for example, I think we'll probably see 6 or 7 Atos models at Warzone. That's my prediction.
You're probably right. He's also got a Cataclysmic Strike melee weapon, which puts him up to strength 16, negative 4 AP, three damage that escalates up to 6 damage against vehicles, buildings, or monsters.
Yeah, I mean, he will employ that. Does it cut his attacks in half, or it just converts all of his attacks that way?
There may be something on here that says he has to do one or the other, but that's Cataclysmic Strike has no other modifier on it.
Yeah, so if he gets it locked in with a Land Raider or an Imperial Knight or Angrath, you know, you switch over to Cataclysmic Strike, and then you can really up your damage that way.
He will beat it to death.
Yeah, the thing that makes him, I think, truly elite, and the reason why I believe that he will either get some kind of Nerf Hammer from GW or ITC, or he will just be, we'll see 4, 5, 6 of him at Warzone and other Forge World allowing tournaments, is he has a 4+ invulnerable that goes to a 3+ and can very easily reroll ones. With the way
and he's what, 18 powers. Wounds, right? 18 wounds model.
He's a 27 wound model.
27.
Sorry, I'm thinking of someone else. But yeah, 27.
I think he goes to a 3-up invulnerable. Isn't
he
that does. Right?
He has the ephemeral form, which adds 1 to any invulnerable saves made with the Tzeentch Demon with this ability.
Right. So, I mean, depending on how you play with, like, for example, the Changeling. And he does have a rule that says, you know, the other demon princes can't come near him. He's jealous
Magnus.
Or something
like that. Roll Scoop Magnus around behind this guy.
Yeah, exactly. And Magnus is what, 400 or 500 points?
Four something. He's not 500. He could be. I don't want to misquote it. We'll check that.
We're talking sub 1,200 points for this guy and Magnus. And then you just like spam 800 points of brimstones. Like that will be an army. I can promise competitive players. Like that is going to be a thing.
We might have just created the boogeyman, the one we're talking about.
And then, you know, I was reading him and I was talking to some of my ATC teammates about him and everything else like that. But Atos is like, it's going to be a real huge issue to do 27 wounds against a 3-up invulnerable when he's flying. You know, if he is part of your army. A lot of times you're going to be going first, right? Because you don't have that many other units to deploy. So you can bring him in. He moves 16 inches a turn, and he has a 60-inch range monstrous weapon. He's crippling in close combat. And then he knows he can use 3 psychic powers a turn and 2 denials.
Let's also remember that he's toughness 8.
Yeah.
So with him being toughness 8, that means that as opposed to many of the other greater demons who are T7, your standard strength 4 bolt guns aren't wounding this guy on 5s anymore. He's crossed that 6+ threshold for your basic weapons. That is another boon to his survivability.
He will be a problem. It will be interesting to see. I am kind of the opinion. I think that some of the Venerable Dreadnought spam lists are going to be a real... are going to be very, very strong. Essentially, this giant demon can kill one of those a turn because it's very hard for him to get that giant base into close combat. So, you know, I think the Dark Angels and Ultramarine Venerable Dread lists are going to be really strong. I also think that once people really get into those Forge World books, the Decimator with the Soulburst Cannon, the double Soulburst Cannon on Decimators are going to be unbelievably powerful.
You mean for beating down things like this? You know,
exactly.
Putting out of high volume of quality 2 damage shots.
Mortal wounds, yes. Right?
Mortal wounds being... Decimator with a Soulburst Cannon or auto cannons just doing base 2 damage and shooting, you know, 8 shots a turn, rerolling hits and wounds. Like, that's a ton of shooting. You will eventually get through that 3+ invulnerable save doing 2-3 damage a pop. You can bring him down. So he's not unkillable. He's not unbeatable. I do think he's going to be a real, real problem.
Another thing to think about from a Space Marine's perspective is the psychic power that turns off invulnerable saves. So, you know, if he ends up being a problem, I can see a rise in Space Marine librarians getting up close and personal, turning that aura on and using that as like, this is the moment where I need to put the damage on this guy. But even doing that, if you shot your entire army at this guy and it was all high strength weapons, the chances that you're going to get through all 27 wounds on a toughness 4 model, like this demon is no joke.
He also gets a +2 to his psychic test, so he's getting those powers off.
Yeah, there's no whoops, I need to get a 5 and I just missed it on my smite roll or whatever. So yeah.
As usual, Forge World has not disappointed.
were talking about earlier, Andrew, was the Dark Jealousy. If at the beginning of the controlling player's shooting phase, any Lord of Change or Demon Prince within 12 inches of Atos, roll a d6. On a 4+, the Staff of Cataclysm's ranged attack must be used against the closest Lord of Change or Demon Prince, friend or foe, contrary to the usual rules for selecting targets.
Yes,
stay on your side.
So I think that is going to be a list building kind of inhibitor. I think that anybody who's going to bring Atos is going to say, well, I can't bring in Lords of Change is potentially a bad thing. I've got a 50-50 shot. You know, Atos is a huge model. I mean, if you don't know which model we're talking about, I encourage you to Google it, look at the model and see if you can find the picture of the scale. He is considerably larger than an Imperial Knight. And so he kind of, and his wings are massive and they drape over the edge of the base pretty considerably. So you're talking about a 30 to 32 inch bubble, basically, you know, with 12 inch radiuses to this giant model in the middle. So you can't effectively maneuver other Lords of Change and Demon Princes around him. It's just movement prohibiting. It's space prohibitive. So if you're going to bring him, you fairly well need to list design to not.
I mentioned using Magnus earlier to maybe buff his rolls, because Magnus will let you re-roll ones to invulnerable save and I think the hits. But that's only for Thousand Suns. You would need a Demon Prince or a Lord of Change behind this guy to give him the buff, and that's why he's got that Dark Jealousy.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, just to clarify, there is a lot, of course, a lot to take in with this edition, so please bear with us as we struggle through some of this cool stuff also, and a couple of these guys, this is the first time they're hearing the complete rundown of these rules.
I mean, I think that it's also, I mean, you look at other models, like the Changeling, for example, 9-inch bubble, -1 to hits, right? If you deploy a Chaos Army, and every competitive Chaos Army is going to be bringing the Changeling, because it's like, hey, giant, it's like the Dark Shroud for Dark Angels, -1 to hit on everything, plus a flying creature. You're now -2 to hit these models. You know,
Changeling's super underrated.
His primary mode is keeping your big stuff alive. I think that one of the biggest things for like Magnus, one of the big shortcomings of Magnus right now is if you deploy Magnus against, for example, my Imperial Guard army, right? I'm going to kill Magnus on turn one, probably 60-70% of the time, without Changeling, because if he's going to move and he's going to smite some stuff and you're going to do some damage to my army and, you know, your smites are going to kill dozens of conscripts or whatever.
Now, he does have warp time that he can scoot up again, but he's still limited into how much it can impact your offensive capability.
Correct. Correct. He's going to suffer an entire turn of my my guard gun line. That's just like almost without fail, right? And if he gets hit by 4 or 5 manticores, he's probably going to die or be seriously debilitated. I mean, the list, for example, I'm taking to ATC has 4 or 5 manticores and 6 sentinels with las cannons, and then a whole bunch of other heavy weapons teams. Yeah, so my ATC list has 4 manticores and 18 las cannons. Well, if a demon army runs into that without the changeling, they're in a world of hurt. I'm gonna kill Magnus 99 times out of 100. But with the changeling, you've taken my hits down. I'm now hitting on 5 pluses, and then flying, I'm now hitting on 6 pluses. That is really problematic for me.
Well, that's the only things that are hard to hit. Not everything is hard to hit for flying.
Well, that's true. I'm sorry. Yeah, anything that's hard to hit. Agreed.
Yeah. And of course, Magnus is a Thousand Suns, not a demon thing anymore, but the way you can build detachments with, like, faction keywords, that's where you're talking about putting him in there in a demon
Correct.
List.
Okay. Correct.
I'm overstating because this everything's brand new.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm taking a lot of things for granted that people are just following along at home. Essentially, because they share the chaos keyword, they can be taken from the same detachments. So you can put, even though Magnus is a Thousand Sun, he shares the keyword, so you can take him in predominantly Tzeentch demon builds. And they're very strong.
So this guy, he can make extra demons with his staff that don't count against your reserve rules. Now there's no more bring in models very often. They've done it very judiciously with how they get extra free models on the table, and this is one of those ways. Now, granted, it's on an 800 point model, I get it, but this is still neat that he has all these abilities. And then one of the last things, and all these big things do, they have a potential to blow up when you remove the last wound. That's one of the cool things. They come up with a neat way to include some type of horrific explosion or disembowelment with every one of these big things in all these books. So even Grathwood,
they've certainly made explosions, especially of transports. They're like, hey, you know, killing a vehicle way harder than it was before, but like now it actually kind of matters. But like, you don't want to be around when this thing pops.
But this dude, he pops on a 4+. And that's big because things that, you know, everything hits on a 6, but when he explodes in sorcerous energy, each unit within D6 suffers D6 mortal wounds. So when he gets down into like 12 wound range, he needs to be always next to whatever, next to your enemy warlord. He needs to be close to something. You know,
you're going to need to get out your ugly distance stick. Cause like, this is the closest I'm going to get to this ugly thing. And just be ready for that explosion.
let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the rest, and then we'll do some we'll do a finishing move segment. I'm going to talk about a concept for painting here at the end of this show. So stick with us.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by DiceHead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hobby supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I'm still Paul. I got Adam and Andrew.
Hey, guys.
What up, homies?
And Chris Morgan.
What's up, guys?
Chris, you just got to hang out with one of our good podcast buddies, Carl Tuttle.
Yeah, it was really fun. He has an office for his work out here that he gets to come over sometimes when we hang out when he does. Took me out to dinner. Real gentleman. Appreciate it. Especially despite the fact that he's really hung up over the post-traumatic whirlwind Scorpius disorder that I've given him. After our last game and the destruction that thing wreaked, which I think is a little exaggerated in his memory. But thanks, Carl. You're the man.
So for the last segment, we were talking about a couple of the big demons, and the ones that we covered are both 700 points. So, you know, I'm gonna yield to the opinion that Atos is he's got a lot packed into that 700 points.
I would agree. I think that...
That bird is beaten, or horse, rather.
And I misquoted earlier. I said that Scabathrax might have been the lowest power level. Zarakanel, the archdemon for Slaanesh, is a power level 23 creature coming in at 460 points. So that is the cheapest of the giant demons we're going to talk about.
So I'm going to set the over under at 5. Over under 5, of all things being equal, unchanged. Over under 5 Atos models at Warzone this year.
Okay, that's fair. I think we'll remember that.
All right.
We'll see it. And that's going to make an interesting bounty of what turn you kill old Atos Ralcaris on.
Yeah. It's the new Taunar.
So it could be. So this Zarakanel, the Slaanesh one, only 20 wounds. And am I a jerk for saying it that way? Only 20 wounds?
Yeah, you are.
You're kind of a jerk. Total. Just a little.
Big J bag.
But she also...
I'm sorry. I just blacked out. Maybe my audio went bad. Were we all calling Paul a jerk? I forgot. I blacked back in. Sorry.
Only 20 wounds on this creature with toughness 8. Movement of 12. So... disadvantaged in that area, but 6 attacks, and then with a negative leadership penalty of -2 at full strength. We're talking about the things we've covered so far as them at full strength. Large creatures and big things in this edition degrade as they take wounds, and most of them have 3 categories worth of, degradation that they go through, degrading.
And some of them, are even multiple, like their attacks, they suffer 5 wounds, their attacks might be D3 wounds as opposed to 5.
Right, and so
right, Paul.
Yeah. The attacks could lower their movement lowers, and then sometimes what they hit on also lowers, gets worse. I shouldn't say lowers, gets worse.
Or their strength
scales down. It scales down with damage.
That's it. This creature, I want to say this archdemon has the Soul Eater Blade, which is +1 strength, so swinging in at strength 8, -4 to AP, which is good. That's up in there in that Dark Lance range, which is a very powerful weapon, with a solid 3 damage. It's not a D3, it's just 3 damage, and each time you make a wound roll of 4+ with this weapon, it inflicts 3 mortal wounds instead of its normal damage against the target. So it replaces the damage, but it is mortal.
So I don't want to get too far off track here, but I think we need to illustrate this. Mortal wounds are very important in this game, in my opinion. And Paul, you may disagree, Andrew, and Chris.
I agree with you. The only way to get rid of a mortal wound is to somehow ignore the injury. There is no save.
Dark Eldar. Is Dark Eldar the only army that can do that? No, there's a bunch. There's a bunch. Like Mephiston, right? On a 5+, he ignores a mortal wound.
Black Rage. Nurgle.
But
in other news, water, wet.
And water, yeah, exactly. But I think that, you know, what this edition
Black Rage, so like Feel No Pain from Black Rage, ignore you can take that save against mortal
anytime
wound.
You would suffer a wound.
Whoa.
My list just got better. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
It didn't get better. You just realized it was better than it was.
You know, but I think one of the things that this edition has done very well, and I love the mortal wound mechanic. I truly and deeply love it because it's one of those things like how now that we have it, you can see how much we were missing it previously. Because you know who doesn't care at all about mortal wounds? Orcs.
Orcs don't care about Mortal Wounds.
Yep. No, they don't.
Imperial Guard largely do not care. We don't care about your Mortal Wounds. You're going to kill another Guardsman. Whoop-de-doo.
All wounds are mortal wounds.
Every edition before this, a bolt pistol was a mortal wound.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, Tyranids, a lot of the Tyranid builds, like, your mortal wounds mean nothing to us. And so that's, I love the fact that there are a ton of armies who hear that this giant 20 wound 500, 450 point Slaanesh super demon is dishing out mortal wounds with its strength 8 attacks. And like, okay.
They're sitting back like,
And the orcs continue to charge forward. But the people who do care are the Tzeentch players who brought Magnus or Ataus, or the Tau player who brought a super tuna. So there is still a place where mortal wounds are hugely problematic. And then there are whole armies that just kind of ignore them as being more expensive versions of regular wounds.
Bolt pistols. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That's good perspective.
So could you walk us through the summoning mechanism one more time?
Yeah, be a good idea.
Sure. So when attempting an archdemonic ritual, the summoning player must first declare which unit they are attempting to summon by name beforehand, and only characters with the same mark of chaos as the unit you wish to summon can be used to summon the unit. When attempting to summon a unit using the archdemonic special rule, roll up to 9 dice. This is your summoning roll. You can summon one new unit with the archdemonic ritual ability to the battlefield that has the power rating equal to or less than the total result, so long as it has the same Chaos God keyword as the character.
People have been complaining about how Chaos God got hit so hard in this edition because they don't have summoning, and summoning has changed, and the mechanic has changed. Are you kidding me? I could build a list.
No, you still designed have to pay for it.
You still have to pay for it, but designed to have her. But I don't have to take her. I could summon something else with those points, correct, Paul?
You can summon one new unit with the arch demonic ritual that shares your god. So you have, but you have to pay the points for it. But this is brought in. This unit is treated as reinforcements for your army and can be placed anywhere on the battlefield that is 12 inches of the summoning character.
So let me just bore down and clarify, because I think this is a threshold matter to whether or not these big demons are playable. Ataus is a power level 35 model. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you can roll up to 9 dice. Isn't that also correct?
And that's it. It's up to 9 dice.
That's it. Total. So you're not summoning anything else. Just 9 dice. All right. I roll 9 dice. An average roll on 9 dice is 36. So if I roll below average, I don't bring him in.
Correct. And you probably just killed one of your characters that can bring him in.
Right. And you've lost a turn, right? Because you can't attempt this multiple times per turn. So, you know, that's a not insignificant drawback. It's basically a coin flip as to whether or not you're going to get this guy in. Yeah, you can burn a command point, so you do have one reroll, which on average is going to help you about...
What it might do is you might be able to avoid a triple, because if you roll the triple, any triples, then the summoning character is slain. So if you roll doubles, you're taking a mortal wound. If you roll triples, you're dead.
He's dead, Jim.
I think it's less about, for anybody who's going to bring these big bad demons to the field, it's less, much less about the summoning character and whether they die. I mean, I haven't looked into it.
To the point, though, what I'm saying is you make your below average roll, you lost the one character you bought, you don't get to bring this guy in anymore.
Right. And then, and now, you know, turn
and
two.
And you're playing 700 points down.
Turn
or whatever
two, 1,000 points of your army is in the box forever.
Well, so you can only attempt this once per game?
Well, no. Yeah. No. You once per cycle.
Only if that opponent is slain.
No, hang on. You have to have a character with the appropriate Mark of Chaos keyword.
So you have to take at least two of these characters to up your chances of getting it in.
If your army contains a model with the archdemonic ritual rule, they may, instead of being deployed normally, be summoned like other demons to the battlefield, although there's a greater risk. So you can put them on the you can put them on the table or put them in reserve.
So they don't have you don't have to summon them.
Right.
It's just can do this in mechanic if you basically want to give them deep strike. That makes sense. Okay. That's a much more like so really you're just going to put them on the table because you're not going to roll the dice on a coin toss and maybe killing one of your characters in order to summon them.
Right.
You should just put them on the table. It's a 27 wound character with a 3 plus invuln and is minus 1 to hit because of the changeling. Like
they're going
to
make it turn.
He'll be fine. All right.
Okay. I think we've come to the understanding on how that works and we were all dancing around what the actual rule was.
Yes, exactly. All right, cool.
Yeah,
glad we hashed that out.
So back to Zeracanel, is that it's a 20 wound model, as we covered, but it has the ability to move 20 plus inches. Sorry, no, 12 inches. 12 inches. Let me start that over again. It has the ability to move 12 inches. So not fast enough to cross that midway point to guarantee any first round charges, but still respectable movement, you know, with a 4 plus and vulnerable save.
Yeah, I mean, it's movement is such a big part of the game right now, and I think that intelligent placement of models ties into that. With a model like this, I mean, 12 inches might seem a little underwhelming, but when you advance and you can, even if you can't get that like that first turn charge off that you want to with this, with the turn that it comes in, which I think in most cases you're going to be setting it up so that you're able to. Within all reason, it's not going to have a hard time getting anywhere.
She always strikes first in the fight phase, even if she didn't charge.
Slash roll, right?
If an enemy also has units that have charged or that has a similar ability, then alternate choosing units to fight with, starting with a player whose turn is taking place. So that first the charger.
Yeah, I mean, so this character seems like. Yeah, I think demonettes are really good in this edition. I think that there's a Slaanesh build to be had, and if you're really a diehard, if you are the Chris Morgan of Slaanesh, if you are to Slaanesh what Chris Morgan is to Blood Angels, this is cool. This is a cool model to play with, and you'll have a lot of fun with it. It's a giant demonette. You will shoehorn it in, and the model itself looks very cool. He, she, whatever. I'm not going to assume its gender, but like whatever it does, like it's a cool model, and you'll have a lot of fun with it. It doesn't leap off the page as being nearly as strong, powerful, or point efficient as Angrath or Atauss. Not trying to disparage it, but like that's just the reality.
I just love that now I'm a metric for comparison for how much people like things.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you know, the next stage up is like whether you're going to drink the Kool-Aid, right? So, like, it's like...
So now let's
get the good stuff. Kool-Aid.
If you're about to talk about this Nurgle stuff, I'm going to go to bed.
Scabblethrax the Bloated, baby.
Oh my goodness. The Bloated. Can you imagine if that was like that's your mantra? That's how people know you? Like you're very bloated.
The mantra gets better. He's Lord of the Blighted Pit.
Oh man. Take a Pepsid.
He's not fast. He moves 7 inches. But he is strength 10 with 6 attacks.
He's pretty happy too, all things considered.
Yeah, toughness 9 with 22 wounds. He has, and I'll run through this fairly quickly so we can get to the finishing move segment, but he has Horrific Vomit, which is a pistol. This is what's important. It's a pistol with 2d6. Strength 6, negative 2 AP that does d3 wounds, but the weapon hits automatically.
That's so huge in this edition.
Is it though?
I mean, anything that was a template.
It's a 2d6. A pistol. He can fire it in close combat, which is exactly. What we talked about earlier. So that's ratcheting up his kill power, I think, by a lot.
So let me ask you this: so which model is this? Is this just the Great Unclean One model?
This is the giant Great Unclean One model.
So does Forge World have that model?
Oh yeah. He's a big model.
Yeah.
He's probably called Scabothrax the Bloated. He's probably twice as tall as a Great Unclean One.
Okay.
Yeah, he's kind of the one with the tongue that wraps around the big rusty looking sword. Got the antlers coming out of his head, kind of like a lot of people would recognize him from the Dawn of War 2 game.
That's always the model that I assumed was the Great Unclean One model.
It's a big model.
Yeah, the normal Great Unclean One. He looks like a big booger compared to this guy.
Well, all right then.
Each time this dude loses a wound on a 5 or 6, the model does not lose the wound because he's disgustingly resilient. So he's going to be on the table a long time, if you ask me, with a 4 plus invulnerable save, 22 wounds, toughness 9, and then a 5 plus, essentially feel no pain.
Yeah, but how is he going to do damage? That's what I don't understand.
He has on the base 6 attacks, and his it's a Blade of Decay, which gives him strength 12 at full strength with a minus 4 AP that does 6 damage. Not D6, 6 damage.
How does he get there, though? He's moving 7 inches a turn.
Well, he's not fast, but he can advance, and then he can charge.
Well, all right.
I mean, it's like... cue the Benny Hill music of him just chasing everybody around. Like,
he's a Nurgle Psyker, so, and he has to take Nurgle powers, so that does reduce his movement a bit. He's not getting warp time, but that does ratchet up his damage again. He's damaging you in every phase of the game.
There's a Nurgle power. I think it's the third power on the list. I think it's Warp Charge 5, which is pretty easy to pass, and depending on who's casting it on a 7 from Nurgle, you get an extra benefit. You choose an enemy unit, and you roll as many dice as there are models in that unit. And on any 6s, they take a mortal wound.
That's pretty big.
In my opinion, that's pretty big. And the only reason that it's big, it's not just the removal of a model or a dealing of a wound. It's the morale phase. And when that comes back around, because after that psychic phase, they're taking a morale check. They might be walking off the board. It's not likely, but there's a chance that it could happen. Anytime you can make an opponent...
This dude can cast 3 psychic powers, one of them being Smite, 2 of them being Nurgle powers. He's got his 9-inch pistol. He's Smite. You know, this guy's got a lot of damage output potential.
Does he also have Smite?
Oh, yeah. He has Smite. Okay. He has Smite and then 2 Nurgle powers, for clarity.
Doesn't every psyker in the game know Smite?
Yes, but this says specifically he gets 3 powers, and one of them is Smite, and 2 of them are Nurgle powers. And he can deny 3, he can attempt to deny 3 things per turn.
I also think that the Forge World Wraithseer doesn't get Smite for whatever reason. I'm not sure what that's about.
Well, it's got its own powers, for sure.
But I think that this guy essentially is going to be the bully. You know, and he has the potential to put out damage. I think he's very very likely to be outmaneuvered by maneuverable armies, but by non-maneuverable armies, especially high model count armies like Guard or Orcs that are going to have giant mobs of dudes, where you're going to have that option, of course, because you can pick your powers before the game begins. It's not when you build your army list; it's before the game begins. You get to decide. Okay, am I going to take the power that heals myself, or am I going to use this as a way of thinning out these herds?
He also has a rule that says your opponent must subtract 1 from any hit rolls that target friendly Nurgle and demon units within 6 inches of him in the fight phase. So just the fight phase, he makes you a little bit harder to hit.
Yeah, just don't ask where the gas for that comes from, guys.
Close your mouth is what you
want to... Yep, keep your mouth closed.
And this dude is coming in at 610 points. So, you know, if you're on the bargain side of these super greater demons, you know, the ones we just talked about are there. And then if you want the more expensive one, the premium points is the first two we talked about. But they have a significant, increased special rule count as opposed to these last two guys.
Yep. No, I think especially for Nurgle fans, they're going to like him better than they've liked him in a while.
Oh, yeah, I'm convinced that of the chaos stuff that has come out so far, Death Guard is the best, just from a competitive standpoint.
Clear winner.
If nothing else, you can't argue with their 5+ ignore.
Right. Yeah. Like that's a huge, massive, massive, massive problem. And they're very survivable. And the way you design your list, I think that there are some huge offensive output units that can be taken to maximize their survivability. So
I've designed a list that doesn't do a lot of shooting and doesn't hit that hard in combat, but has the potential to do 14 plus multiple mortal wounds per turn.
You're talking about Tzeentch? Or no. You said about that Nurgle list that you designed.
My Nurgle list, it's 14.
For sure. There are definitely ways to get a lot of offense out of Nurgle. But their survivability is what kind of makes them elite right now. I think that these Forge World Greater Demons, especially with Angrath, really gives Khorne, who is otherwise... I mean, really, the Rhino Rush list is kind of the one that's being thrown around as the way you could play Khorne.
And when the codexes come out, who knows? Like I said, we were talking about this pre-show. Basically, half of 8th edition hasn't been exposed yet. We haven't seen army-specific rules, army-specific warlord traits, war gear, stratagems, anything else like that. So the jury is still very, very much out. Over the next 6 to 15 months, we're going to really see a whole other half of 8th edition. So take everything with a grain of salt. All that to say, you know, we really want to talk about these four big demons because they kind of open some doors that would otherwise be closed to players of a specific Chaos God.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. And one of the things that we can talk briefly on, stuff that we've heard in the scene about things that are easy to put on, I shouldn't say easy to put on the table, easy to spot in these indexes. And one of them is the Zerker Rush. Simply for the math that it can put out in.
Oh my gosh.
Just the math of weight of attacks from Zerkers, Khorne Berserkers, with how you arm them is brutal. On paper, it looks amazing. And we'll gloss over there. We'll talk about these. And certainly, if you're curious about why we're mentioning these, hit us up on our Facebook page or on Twitter or whatever. But another one of those things is like the 500 conscripts list backed up by Andrew. Priests and commissars.
Yeah, so I think the conscripts lists are going to get dealt with very handily. It's going to be a very short-lived kind of, on paper looks great, in practice is absolutely atrocious.
I think it's a fun sponge, honestly.
I don't even know if it'll be a fun sponge. I think it will lose a lot. And I think the people who bring it are going to not only not have fun, it's a fun sponge for them because it's miserable pushing 200 models around.
Yeah, trying to go up to 500. I mean, that's the potential.
Exactly. And then once they start losing, and they will. I mean, the conscript thing is like, and this is, you know, I'm not trying to be, oh, you know, Andrew thinks he knows so much or whatever. But the reality is that snipers are going to be prolific, right?
Well, I don't want to get too much into the tactics of this. I think that we could we'll actually have some episodes that are just based around some of these lists and the pros and cons of them. But we'll go ahead and make the point, though.
Well, I was just going to say, it may bear itself out that a lot of the things that we see that kind of jump off the page to us that say, hey, wow, this is really good. Let me design my army around this. The one that I've heard repeatedly is the conscript blobs and how you can just screen off your entire army with conscripts. And I think that is so much easier said than done. And I believe that it will not work the way people think it will work. And to Chris's point, it will be a fun spudge, not only for the people who are playing with it, it will be a fun spudge for the people playing with it because it's miserable to push 200-300 models around.
Well, think about it this way, too, with armies like – and, you know, again, I'll save it for when we actually talk about this, but like Poxwalkers, that as they kill models, they get more models. So –
yeah, I mean, it's just it's a ton of models for sure.
Who's getting through that game with all the Poxwalkers versus the conscripts? That's all I'm saying. Right.
So yeah, so it's a time consuming, unfun game. But more to the point, I think it's going to be very middling. I don't think it's not going to be an elite army. You're not going to win a lot of games with it. I mean, you think, for example, oh, I can't, because of the way mobility works now, right? If I'm spending even a quarter, 25% of my army on conscripts that move 5 inches a turn, have essentially zero offensive output. I mean, I get it, they can overwatch like champions, but really they're not doing damage over the top. I mean, the Storm Raven is just going to fly over them and kill everything behind them. Precision Deep Strike, if you leave me any hole, I will land behind you. Outflanking now, I can come on from any board edge, which means, what are you going to bubble wrap 360 around your Manticores?
That's nonsense. Hard to leave, you know, it's hard to find a good opening when there's that many on the table. But let's talk about some of the other stuff, too, is that things like Smite Spam. There's multiple ways to scratch that Smite Spam itch. And that's something that's been very popular in a lot of forums and chats.
Gray Knights have it. I mean, mind you, it's limited range, but it's still viable.
Just the volume of it, right?
I think Zinch demons are the ones who can do it best, with the chariots and the demon princes and lords of change,
as you would expect. Yeah,
brimstones with hiding a blue, putting one blue horror in a unit of brimstones, you start to negate some of the brimstone penalties, you know, the weaknesses of the brimstone, and you maintain your smiting power for just a few extra points. But back to Grey Knights also. Grey Knights being able to have a little bit of mobility in the form of like Dread Knights going around with all that smite back up, dishing out those mortal wounds, and being able to take a punch in combat.
So I played a game recently, and my opponent had Dread Knights with the hammers, and I was playing my buddy's Orc list, and I had Ghazghul.
Gaskell has, I think, 12 wounds, and in one round of combat, the Grey Knight put him out. That's
with them all having force weapons. I mean, it can't go understated. So those I think are the kind of the guard are strong. Mentioned this on a couple of the streams, and I actually did a video on YouTube. You can find it on the FTN YouTube page about just how guard kind of fire on all cylinders. They get to take the brigade detachment without sacrificing a single thing if they want. So you're coming to the game with like 12 rerolls if necessary, plus the other benefits, you know, of command points, and they get all the cool weapons. I mean, so in my opinion, those are kind of the I don't want to say net list because that's it has a bad connotation to it, but those are the prevalent things that I've heard discussed as templates and knights and
I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny. I'm kind of now weirdly sympathetic to some of my friends who used to play Eldar. And if you just strap in and hear me out for a second, I think that because I've been playing Guard for the last 3 years and they've been the bottom of the barrel, and I've been trying to win with playing Imperial Guard and playing them very competitively, and that's been really rewarding in and of itself. And now 8th edition has arrived. And I just happen to own something like 18 mortar squads. And I mean, the reality is for 27 points, I can take 3 mortars. They're 9 points a model. And it's D6 shots per squad. And so now suddenly I'm like, you know, for really not that many points, I could take just an outlandish amount of shooting. Peanuts, exactly. Just an outlandish amount of shooting. And I've played a dozen games so far of 8th edition with my Imperial Guard. They haven't been close because they're just very good. And so it's basically like, now that I'm on top of the hill from a codex perspective, like the army I have been playing for years is now really good. And I didn't do anything.
Happy day, man. Just take it and go with it.
It just fell into my lap. And so now everyone just berating me and riding me like, oh, you're playing the gunline guard spam, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah,
with
you know what?
Vestorians, it's not like you just, you know.
Exactly. I paid my dues, man. I paid my dues. And so I've been painting up Sentinels like a champion. So,
well, because they are the standout unit. That's it.
And the Rough Riders. Let's not forget.
Yeah,
right? the diligence for
the Rough Riders in real life.
Vestroian Rough Riders.
So as we scramble to get our armies ready for 8th edition, because there will be some change, there are some things that, I mean, if you're a longtime collector, you probably have it, but a lot of people are probably going to be getting new figures, getting them ready, and getting them ready in a rush for upcoming tournaments, because everybody's wanting to get out and play some competitive
8th edition. Buy more Razorbacks.
Razorback redundancy is also one of the templates you'll see out there right now.
Definitely.
Backed up by Gilliman or Azrael on the Dark Angel side. Very strong. But as you get ready for, even if you're, I shouldn't have put it on the match play slant. You want to play a cool game with your buddy, and you've been rivals for years, and you're playing a narrative game. You still want it to look good. You're going to be scrambling to get stuff ready for game day, period, I think. So the finishing move segment today is going to be based around that. It's going to be based on a quote that I got from one of the painters at Games Workshop. I think he's like one of the managers of the staff. You can follow him you find him on Twitter. That's how I first interacted with him. Amazing painter. I think he's been in White Dwarf. A guy by the name of Chris Peach. Amazing guy to talk to also. Really fun to chat with there. I told you they had all those guys lined up, receiving people and entertaining folks that were there for the launch and the other stuff going on that weekend. So this finishing move segment brought to us by Frontline Gaming. I just picked up the Robot City terrain to go with the Robot City mat. You know, they've got themed terrain to go with their cool mats. Models slide across them. You've seen their commercials. I can't say it enough. I'm a big believer in it. And I think we all play on Frontline mats, so the mats like them. It's very awesome that they have also themed terrain to go with that. You've heard me say this before if you're a longtime listener. It's the easiest way to pro up your gaming table is to get a mat from Frontline.
I'm very proud to feature several of them at my GT coming up next weekend.
So nice. They've sponsored the Finishing Moves segment for a while now. Great buddies of the show. They have great products, so check them out. Finishing Moves today is based on the quote that I heard. Faces and bases make your models look aces.
Yep, that goes right along with what I heard, that the secret to making a fantasy dwarf army good was beards and faces, shields and bases. So all of those things that like from 3 feet away make your army look finished, even if the rest of it's just primed.
These are focal points, right?
I think that's if we had to boil this down to anything, they're focal points. You could throw a couple layers and a dry brush on a model, and if the faces look good, or what I'm going to get into in a second, the weapons look good and the bases look legit, I mean, you've got a competitor for best painted at any tournament that you're going to go to.
Putting a good base on a model is a forgiving tactic, where you can put a good base on an average model, and it's still going to look like a great model. And I think the same can be said for the focal points that we're talking about. Now, to make the rhyme work, of course, faces were mentioned. And that's a good thing, because if you nail that face, like we talked about this before, if you nail that bald head or that stubble on a head, or you really get those eyes done well, people are going to notice that.
Yep.
It's the truth. And you know what the secret to getting really easy detail on heads and faces? Liquid talent, otherwise known as Agrath's Earthshade.
Or you could warm it up with different tones. The redder the tone, or even a purple tone, give you all different face feels. You know, sounds weird, but it's the best way I could describe it.
I mean, well, think about the way that your face actually reflects color, right? They ran into this problem with 3D animation where faces just ended up looking plasticky all the time. So what do? They go in and they create layers of color based on the colors that are underneath the skin. And that's where, on the painting end, purple, which seems weird, actually makes a lot of sense when you consider all of the veins and things that are beneath your skin that are reflecting light, even though it is through your skin. So don't just dismiss a color because you think purple face? What is that? No, you just layer on top of that. Use that as something as a foundation to help build up that depth.
This segment is normally about getting out of your comfort zone and doing something with a paintbrush that you normally wouldn't do, and spending that extra 5 or 10 minutes on a model to really make it shine and get you those extra kind of painting points, you know, or just be proud of it. You spent that extra 10 minutes and did it. But this segment's going to be more about the concept of the focal points, doing something to the model that you know is going to stand out. I don't mind saying it, like my Sylvaneth. My Sylvaneth that I painted, I'm incredibly proud of them. But I knew if I nailed the weapons, then no one's going to get too close and look at my leaves, you know. So I spent a lot of time.
So you're saying they're going to leave that part alone?
They'll leave that part alone. I can't believe I echoed that, but that's what they're going to do.
That's the power of the librarian.
I just wrapped up a giant, in 8th edition terms, giant Necron army. And my customer wanted it to be a bone armor, gritty, and dirty. So there's not a lot of fine edge highlighting or anything like that, but you need to still have focal points. And the focal points on this entire army are the glowing effects on the weapons. So he didn't want the acrylic green rod. He wanted them to be bright blue. So that's going to be your focal point. And that's on everything from the Praetorians to the Immortals to everything that I've done in this army. Even the race have little blue dots on them. All of the vehicles do. And then the bases. So, like, the armor is really solid work, and you could achieve what I did. And there's a tutorial at the Beyond the Brush Studios page if you want to see how I did it. But you could achieve the same thing with a sponge effect and just doing some nice base coats with either a dry brush or the airbrush and then sponging it on after a wash. But it's those blues and the base that really tie this army together. And I would be surprised if he didn't go to his next. And I'm really proud of this. I'm proud of everything that I put out. I would be surprised if he didn't go to his next tournament and didn't win Best Painted with this army, because it's spectacular. And it's just a few simple things, like you were saying, Paul, focal points.
Well, and I think that's the takeaway of the Finishing Move segment here, is that if you have to rush, don't skimp on these things. And I know we let it off with faces and bases, but there's going to be something on the model that kind of, that you know people are going to look at, whether it's the power weapon of somebody that, or, you know, maybe somebody might be pointing and you've got to get that light, that light reflected just right across their arm. Maybe you can only highlight their shoulders and you don't have time to highlight the legs. There are things that you can do that will stand out, that maybe you don't have to do your best efforts on everything. And I'm not endorsing not doing your best efforts. I'm only mentioning this because I know there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm and rush to get things ready for the table for 8th edition.
Well, if you think of painting in three basic terms, and it's color, contrast, and overall look, and that's the base, that's the atmosphere that you put down. You can achieve that very simply, like you were saying, Paul. I mean, you focus on the swords. What did you dry brush your Sylvaneth wood with a couple of different colors of brown, and then you did these bright orange swords on them, right?
It looks good. It looks good to me. It has a very organic feel to it. I used a tutorial that I found online, and it's the same colors that come in the box with the figures. So, I mean, the same color palette anyway. So I'm happy with how it came out, but I knew that even if I, let's say I didn't want to necessarily go deep on the dryads, you know, or this one unit I wasn't sure I was going to use, I could nail that focal point, and people
because
would
you
walk
had a
by.
Cohesive theme.
Yeah,
right.
People would walk by and say, "That's a good looking army, dude."
Yeah. So what I'm getting at is, it's not just faces and bases. It could be gun pylons and shoulder pads. It could be bases and a freehand. I mean, whatever it is, it's a couple things that can take your army to that next level that, you know, other players might not take it to.
Yeah,
so do it.
And people will notice. You will stand out if you adhere to this stuff. If you can do nothing else, it will stand out because of this. We're going to go and wrap up. I know this has been a long show, but I know we talked about mostly just this Imperial Armor Index for Chaos stuff, but as this edition evolves, we're going to talk about all the concepts that we kind of touched on in this show, and I really appreciate you guys coming along for the ride with us.
Yeah, man, it's great to be talking about 40K. There's just so much to talk about. We got to take it, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So stay tuned. We'll have more.
You guys have a good night.
I see dead people.